The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Another beautiful, beautiful afternoon here in Edstone, England. Yesterday, as I told you, we got the college school year kicked off with a couple of orientation lectures. Well, I guess there were more lectures even after we completed the morning session. And those lectures continue today. And then classes are in session tomorrow. Last night, by the way, a few of us were able to go see Shakespeare's Julius Caesar at the Royal Shakespeare Company in Stratford-upon-Avon. And I believe Richard Palmer might have played an excerpt of that play a couple of weeks ago. It's an excellent play and thoroughly enjoyable, excellent acting as well. And just in sifting through some of the literature that we've produced over the years, I noticed a couple of true education pieces, one by Mark Jenkins, I think, in particular, where he recommended this play. If you're as a parent, I know this is a point that we stressed at PYC for our young people to just build a small library and to start accumulating some of the classics. And if your young people, if your children are like so many in this world where they find Shakespeare boring or they can't understand it, this would be an excellent play to start them in on. Julius Caesar, it has such a gripping plot, and it's, I think, of all the ones I've seen at the RSC in Stratford, it's probably the easiest to follow. Some of them are a little harder to follow for sure, but this has such a gripping plot, and as I said, the acting was just exceptional. Mark Antony's eulogy, I believe that was what Richard played a while back. That was just an exciting scene to witness, his eulogy there at the funeral where he spoke to the people of Rome. There's all kinds of statements, classic statements in the play. One in particular, which reminded me of a lecture my father gave a couple of years ago. It's that that scene where Brutus is talking to Cassius, and he says, "There is a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune." And Brutus there is saying that the key to success in life, it's in knowing that the tide is approaching and seizing upon that opportunity. And this is what my father brought out in his orientation lecture from, I see it was 2014, so it was 3 years ago. We're right at orientation time again. But he said 3 years ago to the students at Armstrong College, he said, using the paraphrasing the words there from that exchange between Brutus and Cassius, he says, "There is a tide in the affairs of Armstrong College, a spiritual tide. And if it's taken at the flood, it's going to lead you into such a marvelous and wonderful and dazzling reward from God that it's just going to set your imagination on fire when you think about it." He said further, "There are just no greater opportunities on this earth than right here and right now. Jesus Christ is about to return, and we're going to introduce him to this world." You talk about a spiritual tide. That makes you think of Isaiah's prophecy, where he talked about the knowledge of God covering the earth like the waters cover the sea. The whole earth, it's going to be full of God's knowledge. The whole earth. You talk about a tide turning into a flood. There's a quote in my father's booklet, The God Family Vision, where he asks why we're building up these educational institutions. We have two campuses now for the college. There's the Imperial Academy for those in the years before college. And, of course, there's lots of online students all over the world participating in that program. But he says, why build why build those colleges throughout history? He's talking about the colleges of Samuel and Elijah and Elisha. He spent some time, my father did, talking about those schools yesterday in his orientation lecture. But he said, why build all of those colleges if men were only going to turn away from them? I mean, that's what happened historically. Even Ambassador College, starting in 1947, look at what happened to that following the death of Herbert Armstrong. My father explained yesterday how that when he went out and talked to the successors of Herbert Armstrong, the Tekachas, this would have been, I think, in 1988, 1989, and talked to them about the work and talked to them about a prophecy message or a prophetic message to get out to this world. He said that that didn't go over well with the Tekachas, as they said, look, we're focusing on the college now. And as my father explained yesterday, they got it backwards. The priorities were wrong. They forgot that the college is here, God's college is here, to support God's work. It's not the other way around. We're not in the college business, as Herbert Armstrong so often said. But the college is crucial, no doubt about that. Mr. Armstrong also said that the growth of the college is what made it possible for the work to grow. But the college is here for the work. That's something that he always said. In any event, going back to this God family vision quote, why build the colleges if so many are going to turn away from the teaching and the instruction coming out from them? My father says, because that is not the way it will happen very soon. He says, in the world tomorrow, God will establish those colleges all around the world, many thousands of them. And the first fruits will lead those colleges as they declare the Father and this God family vision. Then, he says, God's knowledge, this vision, will cover the earth as the waters fill the ocean beds. You talk about a tide in the affairs of men, which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune. Look at what we're learning today in God's church, at God's college. The church itself is a college for teachers. Mr. Armstrong makes this point in Mystery of the Ages. God is preparing rulers. He's training teachers. He's training educators so that the whole world might be educated in his way of life. And when you look at this world, doesn't it need to be educated in the ways of God? Look at the constant strife and bickering. Look at the violence. Look at how, look, we talked some yesterday about it, just briefly, but look at how ugly that scene was over the weekend in Charlottesville. And as I said yesterday, of course, the media has to make it out to look like Trump. Donald Trump is the problem. But if you just leave that aside, look at the ugly hatred coming from both sides. And the president alluded to that on Saturday, but it wasn't nearly enough. He just got pounced on. He was just getting pummeled all over the place, Saturday night, all through Sunday. And so then he comes out yesterday to clarify, or at least to add to his statement from Saturday night. And here's what he said about those clashes, those violent clashes in Charlottesville on Saturday, clip one.
As I said on Saturday, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. And as I have said many times before, no matter the color of our skin, we all live under the same laws. We all salute the same great flag. And we are all made by the same Almighty God. We must love each other, show affection for each other, and unite together in condemnation of hatred, bigotry, and violence. We must rediscover the bonds of love and loyalty that bring us together as Americans. Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs. including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans.
And so now he gets very specific, singling out KKK, neo-Nazis, the white supremacist groups, and so on. Any other hate groups he brings out. And yet, as the New York Times wrote this morning, new outcry as Trump rebukes Charlottesville racist 2 days later. Now the outcry is, well, what took him so long? Why did it take 48 hours? Why didn't he come out with a stronger statement right away? I mean, that should have been his knee-jerk reaction. And, of course, there are those who are implying, and many who are saying it directly, well, he didn't come out strong enough on Saturday because he sympathizes with those groups himself. He's a white supremacist. He's a racist. We have a racist in the White House. Meanwhile, you look on the streets of America, and we've been, of course, we've been preparing you for this for years. For years. You saw so much hatred in the emergence of groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa, and of course, all of the attacks on policemen. And then now over the past year, you've had this other movement at the other extreme. These white supremacist groups, which are gaining in popularity because they've it's called the alt-right movement, this white nationalist movement. And its influence is spreading because some right-wing websites and other groups have given these groups that used to be way off in obscurity, they're giving them a platform, a voice. In any event, look at what's happening on the streets. There was some video just yesterday of these left-wing Marxist protesters toppling a Confederate soldier. That's the way the movement's going now. They've got to go all over the United States and pull down these statues. Anything that has to do with the Deep South anything about the Confederacy. And here you can't see the picture obviously on this program, but you can hear some of the sound of the chants in this crowd around this Confederate soldier statue, and then the cheering that goes on once it's toppled. This is clip 4. That's from Durham, North Carolina, just last night. And Durham, the Durham newspaper, the Herald Sun, it has this within its article on the incident saying, sheriff's deputies recorded the event but did not intervene as a protester climbed a ladder and slipped a yellow bungee-like cord around the soldier's head and arm, and a group pulled the cord. So the police were there filming it but doing nothing about this crowd that pulled down this statue, that destroyed the statue. And now there's reports from all over the United States, you know, this city or that city, that's saying, well, we're going to go and remove all the statues. We've got to get rid of them. I mean, racism, it's in America's DNA, and we've got to get rid of it. But you look at that scene last night from Durham, and it brings back memories of what Mayor Stephanie Rawlins Blake said in Baltimore in 2015. Hey, let's stand down. Let's remove the police. Let's give the rioters space to destroy. In an environment like this, I mean, how fast is the violence and the division and the hatred going to spread? Here comes a new administration, President Trump, and of course, he's I think most would say, very much pro-police. And yet, where were the police last night in Durham? Where were the police on Saturday in Charlottesville? That's another angle to this story. Where were the police when they could have nipped that in the bud? As it was just out of control, and police were seen leaving. leaving the scene. Because, well, it was getting too violent. And so you have to give them space to destroy. You have to give the alt-right space now to destroy. You have to give Antifa space to destroy. And so the two went at it. And it led to that white supremacist getting in his car and mowing down those pedestrians, killing one young lady. How much longer before the ticking time bomb explodes? Melanie Phillips did a great job today just breaking down these, who was at the protest and what we should be worried about as we think about these two extreme movements. She says the Unite the Right demonstration brought on to the streets neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other racist extremists. The sight of them marching with swastika flags and flaming torches was stomach-turning. You probably saw the images. I mean, this is going on in the streets of America, waving neo-Nazi signs and carrying these flaming torches like something you'd see out of the 100 years ago. She says, but ranged against them were the Antifa, self-designated anti-fascists who are anything but. And of course, this is where the major media, they blotted this part of it out. The way they see it, it was just neo-Nazis and President Trump. He sympathizes with the white supremacist groups and he's crazy. Never mind the left-wing violence, which has been, as I said yesterday, I mean, that's been going on for years now. That was going on all through the Obama years, and it was ramped up with the election of Donald Trump. Violence in Chicago, violence in Berkeley, violence in lots of other cities as well. Rioting. She says, Melanie Phillips does, they have a record, this Antifa movement, they have a record of unprovoked violence, rioting, and thuggery. Their Black Lives Matter offshoot includes racists who incite violence against white people. So you have a racist organization that incites violence against white people, and you have a racist organization that incites violence against people of color. And they clashed. They clashed in Charlottesville. When you think about what the Bible prophesies regarding the fall, yes, the fall of America, and what's to happen before we're attacked from enemies without. Ezekiel 4 and 5 lay out that picture, and it's not a pretty picture. It's a very ugly picture. And you can see it building. You can see it building right before your eyes. Melanie Phillips says, since Trump's ascendancy, there have been repeated outbreaks of violence, mostly perpetrated by Antifa, against ordinary Republicans and other conservatives, either at pro-Trump rallies or other public platforms. These people have been either stopped from speaking or physically attacked by Antifa and other left-wing demonstrators. See, when that happens, the media always, they always ignore it, or they at least they downplay it. Sometimes they'll put Democrats on the TV that endorse it. Melanie Phillips brings this out in her piece. I mentioned that that shooting of all those Republicans a couple of months ago. Shot, almost killed by this Bernie Sanders supporter. And of course, no news outlets were coming out and blaming it on Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders himself said, how can I be responsible for, you know, millions of people that supported my candidacy? Of course, you can't just lay the blame squarely on his shoulders. But now we see the double standard. Melanie Phillips says the Democratic establishment dismisses such people as mavericks with no significance for the left-wing causes they support. Yet, a double standard operates against President Trump, who is held to be personally defined by the unacceptable nature of a tiny minority of his supporters. And so when a tiny minority of his supporters act the way that they did, in a despicable way over the weekend. As you heard yesterday on the program, the White House, of course, is to be blamed. He's to be blamed, the president, because, well, David Duke, this grand wizard of the KKK, he claims to support Trump. And yet, as Melanie Phillips brings out, I mean, what about all the associations that Hillary Clinton has with these violent groups? Or Barack Obama? Where was the major media when all of those associations were popping up in 2008? Jeremiah Wright, Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, and on it goes. Melanie Phillips says it is grotesque to equate Trump's pledge to make America great again, which was endorsed by 63 million Americans who voted for him, with the bigotry of white supremacism. The former is driven by people wanting to uphold core American values they deeply cherish and share with each other. The latter is driven by loathing of racial and ethnic groups deemed to be inferior. So there are these fringe groups on both sides. And even Melanie Phillips here, I think she wants to make it seem like it's smaller, I think, than what it really is. But these movements on both sides, both of these extremes, they're growing. And you can see it on the streets. They're growing. And the number of people that sympathize with each group on either side, that number is growing as well in any event. In the view of Ms. Phillips, she feels like that Donald Trump should have come out with a stronger statement on Saturday night. She says that he should have been stronger for this reason. Such a response was not just morally but politically necessary. I mean, he needed it for political reasons too. She says, for the left's real target is not the far right, but mainstream conservatives who want to uphold American values and culture, the people who brought Trump to power. It's an insightful comment. Who are they really going after? And you see it in the, forget about the immediate reaction of President Trump for a moment. What was the immediate reaction of the media? Here you have, as she explains in her column, this frightening scene. These torches, these swastikas, these neo-Nazi signs. And then as soon as the day is ended, I mean, the real target was the President of the United States. The real target is the conservatives who want to uphold American values. She says, defending national identity, however, is denounced by Western progressives as white racism. So in the broader sense, you have the one side that wants to defend America's national identity, and the other side, the progressive side, the so-called progressive side, that views that as racism, pure and simple. And it's so widespread that even the President of the United States is guilty. Here's a montage of what the president has said over the years regarding these white supremacist groups. Clip 3.
Your views on the Ku Klux Klan and white supremacists.
I totally disavow the Ku Klux Klan. I totally disavow David Duke. I've been doing it now for 2 weeks. You're probably about the 18th person that's asked me the question.
I didn't even know he endorsed me. David Duke endorsed me? Okay. All right. I disavow.
David Duke announced his Senate candidacy, claiming your agenda for his own, or essentially saying, glad that you spoke out.
Are you ready before you ask the question?
Newt Gingrich said, every Republican should repudiate this guy, no matter what it takes.
And I do. Right. Rebuked. Is that okay? Rebuked.
Rebuked.
Done.
What do you see as the biggest problem with the Reform Party right now?
Well, you've got David Duke just joined. A bigot, a racist, a problem. I mean, this is not exactly the people you want in your party.
See, that's some history that the major media, they're going to ignore now. They're going to leave that aside now. I mean, for one, it doesn't even matter how many times President Trump said it. It's not going to be enough. What he said yesterday won't be enough. What he said Saturday evening And really, when you compare that to even some of the statements President Obama made after police shootings, Saturday night's comment was pretty strong. But because he said it's coming from both sides, that was unacceptable. He had to single out the white supremacist groups, and so he does it yesterday, and now, like the New York Times says today, how did they title it today, the New York Times? New outcry as Trump rebukes the racist 2 days later. Well, now there's something new to cry out about. There's always something to be unhappy about. There's always something to criticize. There's always somebody to blame. There's always something to point the finger at. What is wrong with man's nature? Do you really see a solution to this? Apart from God, I mean. It's time for people to turn to God and to consider what he has to say about the carnal mind of man and about what happens when one side gets a step up on the other. What does the other side do? Well, then they ramp it up a notch. And that's where it's headed, to an explosion. Melanie Phillips says in her piece, she refers to Richard Spencer, this white supremacist that invented the blanket term alt-right. And he did it to expand the blanket to include more groups. And now, I mean, the left has seized upon that because it's easier to sort of associate those conservatives that want to uphold American values with the kinds of thugs that were protesting in Charlottesville on Saturday. And so it's leading to a civil war. She talks about a cultural civil war at the end of her piece. In fact, it's leading to an actual civil war. We got a small preview of it on Saturday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to send comments to the program, you can send those to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I tell you, when you put some of these headlines together and look at just what's happening all at once, it's a frightening scenario. Bloomberg says today that these white nationalist groups, these white supremacist groups, that they're saying, hey, this is just the beginning. They see what happened on Saturday as a great victory. And they're planning more demonstrations. They want to get out there and promote their agenda. Bloomberg says the University of Florida said white provocateur Richard Spencer, whose appearances, well, that's the one Melanie Phillips mentioned in her column. His appearances sometimes stoke unrest, is seeking permission to speak there next month. That's the University of Florida. And white nationalist Preston Wigginton had said he was planning a White Lives Matter rally at Texas A&M University in September. So you have the Black Lives Matter chance and you have the White Lives Matter chance. Also, it says a neo-Confederate group has asked the state of Virginia for permission to rally at a monument to Confederate General Robert E. Lee in Richmond on September 16th. They're going to start rallying around these monuments that are going to be torn down. Rallying against it. And of course, because free speech in the United States, you have to clear the way for them to rally. But what happens, like, if on Saturday they show up with sticks and clubs and other devices, and then the police take off? Well, what happens is what we saw happen. Isaiah 1 and verse 5 says, "Why should you be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart is faint." There's a sickness from head to toe. And of course, the head is that's the government. That's what directs the whole operation. And when the government is sick, when the head is sick, how are we going to be able to prevent these problems from exploding into worse problems? You can look at a verse over in Daniel 8 and verse 12 and see there the principle of evil prospering in an environment of lawlessness. That's what we're seeing in so many of America's cities. And I know a lot of Republicans thought that, well, now that Donald Trump is in office, the police are going to come back strong and we won't see the kinds of social unrest that we saw in the previous 8 years. Well, Saturday was a wake-up call. From the sole of the foot, even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. The prophet says, "Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire." This is Isaiah 1 and verse 7. "Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate as overthrown by strangers." Look at those two extreme groups that you saw on the television screens over the weekend. Do you think either of them were looking at where they were, this college town, and all of the prosperity and all of the blessings that God has bestowed upon our land, our nation? Do you think any of them were saying, "Well, hang on a second. Let's set aside these grievances and all be thankful for the fact that we've been brought up in such a wealthy, prosperous nation where there have been so many blessings, where the middle class lives like royalty would have lived a few centuries ago?" None of that, though. I mean, everyone's got a grievance. The whole world is against everyone that you saw in those protests. That's what they'd like for us to believe. And the movements, as I say, they're growing in strength. More demonstrations are being planned, even as we speak. And it's all prophesied. This race war, violence, and division. Herbert Armstrong was writing way back in 1968. He said, "Look at these sudden emotional flare-ups of student revolt and race consciousness, prejudice, resentments, and hatreds. Why the sudden inflaming of student rebellion? Why have both exploded into violence?" He says the underlying cause is simply human nature. "Human nature is the underlying cause of the strife, the revolt, the violence. But what has triggered it?" He says, "In most cases, I can tell you definitely that these riots and student uprisings have been deliberately planned, intentionally provoked, well organized." See, that's the thing we want to continually be reminded of. The cause, the source of it is human nature. Jeremiah 17 and verse 9, where it talks about how wicked the human heart is. And Romans 8, 7 talks about how hostile it is to God's law. But these movements are being intentionally, deliberately planned, intentionally provoked, and they're well-organized, both sides. You've got the alt-right showing up with their torches and their swastikas, and then you've got Antifa showing up. And they're both ready to fight. And they're both ready to take it to the next level. And it's leading to a race war. Mr. Armstrong said in 1963, he said, race war is coming. Race war is coming. Racial tensions, passions, and hatreds are being deliberately stirred by organized planning. He said it will explode into mass violence that will stagger the imagination. Indeed, we've got to get ready for what's coming. As disturbing as that was over the weekend, it's going to get far worse. Herbert Armstrong was preparing you for this. Of course, my father's been saying this for going on a decade, or at least concentrating on it these past 10 years. He was writing about it even in the early 1990s in that first edition of the Ezekiel Watchman booklet. But in particular, 8-9 years ago, because when then-Senator Obama was coming into office or campaigning to be president, I mean, the whole major media complex was just heaping praise upon him and America, saying, well, look at the steps that we've taken. We're about to vote in a black president, and he's going to heal all of the racial division. That's what they were saying back in 2008. And now, I mean, we've never been so divided. Now we're seeing shocking events. You watch some of that footage from Saturday evening or Saturday afternoon and think, is that America or is that Venezuela? That was America, all right. Well, my father was writing back in 2008. Many people believe that Mr. Obama is going to greatly improve race relations, but our racial problems are going to rapidly get much worse. I mean, you can't hit the nail any more square on the head than that. That was when everyone was saying, this is a sign of improved race relations. The fact that Barack Obama is gaining popularity, the fact that he might become president of the United States. My father said the race card is going to be played often for political gain. Yes, it is. That's what's been happening. Well, if you finish out this passage in Isaiah 9, or at least the next few verses, it talks about our people going the way of Sodom and Gomorrah. It's because of our sins. You see, evil prospers. Evil prospers in an environment of lawlessness. And when you consider the evil human heart, Jeremiah 17:9, I guess I paraphrased it a moment ago. Let me just read that to you to get the full verse here. Jeremiah 17, verse 9, and again, you can put it together with Romans 8 and verse 7. Verse 9 here says, the heart, that's the human heart, the mind, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Who can know it? I mean, besides God, who can know just how evil the human heart can really and truly be? You put it together with Romans 8 and verse 7. You put it together with 1 Kings 8 and verse 38, where it talks about the plague of the human heart. And then put it together with what God says in Revelation 12. The fact that Satan has been cast down to this earth. He's confined to this earth. That's the language used in Revelation 12. Satan and his demons confined to this earth. Do you think they have anything to do with what happened in Charlottesville? Do you think they're behind the response to President Trump's comments Saturday evening? It's just one thing after another. He's whipping it up, this hatred, this animosity, this division and strife, this violence. My father wrote back in 2015, this was at the height of all these attacks aimed at the police. He said the effect of responding to lawlessness by handcuffing law enforcement is very dangerous. It's certain to add fuel to the fire. You handcuff law enforcement like they did in Charlottesville on Saturday, like they did in Durham last night. That's very dangerous. It's only going to pour fuel on the fire. And it leads right into Ezekiel 5. You can read that passage on your own. I've gone through it before, where it talks about the siege coming upon our nations, our destruction, in other words, how that God divides it into thirds, illustrated by Ezekiel's hair. And the first third, it says that our cities are going to be burned with fire. And then comes the attack. And then comes the captivity or the slavery. That first third, though, that first third, that's what my father's been concentrating on these last couple years. This siege that's brought on by our economy being just battered by foreign competition, trade wars. But as my father has added, he's added this to what Herbert Armstrong so often talked about, the economy, trade war and such. My father has drawn attention to the fact that the fire there in the midst of the city, it also has to do with widespread social unrest. And the two go together hand in hand, because as the economy goes south, people are going to be more discontented, more angry, more divided. Well, as I say, you rattle off all of the headlines and you look at not just at what one thing is happening so fast, but at how many things are happening simultaneously. There's a headline in the Times over here in the UK writing about President Trump, how that he's putting the United States on the brink of trade war with China. I mean, that factors into this prophecy in Ezekiel 5. Together with the social unrest that we're going to see spill into the streets of America. Here comes Donald Trump following through on so many of his campaign promises. Remember the clips we played last year? Those that mocked him for saying that, well, what you're going to do is going to cause a trade war. And he said, trade war? We're already in a trade war. So he's going to draw the line in the sand. And he did that yesterday, when he signed this memorandum addressing China's intellectual property violations. He's unleashing this investigation into China's unfair trade practices. And here's how he set it up, this signing of the memorandum yesterday, clip two.
The theft of intellectual property by foreign countries cost our nation millions of jobs and billions of dollars each and every year. For too long, this wealth has been drained from our country while Washington has done nothing. They have never done anything about it. But Washington will turn a blind eye no longer. Today, I'm directing the United States Trade Representative to examine China's policies, practices, and actions with regard to the forced transfers of American technology and the theft of American intellectual property. As President of the United States, it's my duty and responsibility to protect the American workers, technology, and industry from unfair and abusive actions. We will stand up to any country that unlawfully forces American companies to transfer their valuable technology as a condition of market access.
That was President Trump yesterday talking about the investigation now that's going to look into China's unfair trade policies. The Washington Post is saying that this could last for about a year. And it says that maybe the administration is going to use this as leverage to get China to help contain North Korea. I mean, but and North Korea, as we've been covering over the last couple programs, North Korea is a nuclear-armed terrorist state, a rogue state. headed up by a mentally unstable madman. And so this is the world. These are all the headlines in recent days. Here, the president of the United States is triggering what might could end up in a trade war. Well, prophecy tells us it will end up as that. But what a tightrope to walk. This investigation on the one hand, and then using it perhaps as leverage against China so that they can intervene in the North Korean situation. And of course, all of this as if operating in this way, as if China doesn't have any leverage at all, which they do have leverage. And there's a mart of nations, as your Bible prophesies. It's not just about China. It's about China coming together with Germany. It's about China coming together with South America. In all kinds of trade arrangements that freeze out the United States, that freeze out Great Britain. That's what we see happening. Going back to this Times piece from today, Trump puts U.S. on brink of trade war with China. It says here, President Trump has taken the United States to the brink of a trade war with China by instructing a senior official to investigate allegations that the country steals corporate secrets and employs other unfair trading practices that destroy American jobs. It says, amid diplomatic tension between Washington and Beijing over North Korea, Mr. Trump signed an executive order instructing Robert Lighthizer, U.S. trade representative, to open a preliminary investigation into whether Chinese trade practices warranted a full-scale inquiry that could lead to the imposition of tariffs and other sanctions. And if you remember during the campaign, he talked about imposing tariffs of 45% on goods coming in from China. How do you think China is going to react to that? 45%. That was the tough talk all through the campaign season. Trade war. We're already in a trade war. It's time for us to fight back. Yesterday may have been the first step for a Trump administration in fighting back. It says the White House cited a report by the Commission on the Theft of American Intellectual Property, which estimated that stolen trade secrets, counterfeit goods, and pirated software cost the U.S. economy between $225 billion and $600 billion a year, with China the world's leading infringer. Beijing responded through an editorial in China Daily, a state-run newspaper, saying that the president would poison the overall China-U.S. relationship if he politicized trade between the countries. A White House official insisted at the weekend that any investigation would be totally unrelated to Beijing's position on Pyongyang, North Korea, in other words. It says a spokesman for China's foreign ministry said there is no future and no winner in a trade war, and both sides will be the losers. Well, the biggest loser of all will be the United States of America. That's what your Bible prophesies. It says further, in a further response on Tuesday, China's Ministry of Commerce said it would take appropriate measures to protect the country's interests if the U.S. took unilateral action that damaged their trading relationship. So China's going to respond. I mean, we've been saying that over and again. China will have a response. Germany will have a response. Britain's leaving the European Union. And so the European Union's going to have a response. There was another article in the same Times today. This is in the same newspaper. Today's newspaper here in London. EU could block trade deals for 3 years after Brexit. And so the UK leaves and they get punched in the gut. The EU says, all right, we'll block these trade deals for 3 years. Pretty amazing just how fast all this is happening. And it's all simultaneously happening. The Washington Free Beacon, just switching over to the Middle East. We know about the King of the South. We know about the King of the North. We know about the clash that's going to trigger World War III. The Free Beacon today says Iran is sending warships to the Atlantic Ocean. amid a massive new military buildup. It's going to boost its war spending by $500 million. Where is Iran getting all this cash? We know about the hundreds of billions that it got following the JCPOA. We know about the hundreds of billions of dollars that President Obama handed over to them. But evidently there's a lot more. It says here, this is the Free Beacon, Iran is preparing to send a flotilla of warships to the Atlantic Ocean following the announcement of a massive $500 million investment in war spending, according to Iranian leaders, who say the military moves are in response to recent efforts by the United States to impose a package of new economic sanctions on Tehran. These nations are not hesitating to punch back. They are not hesitating to answer back to any and every move that the United States makes, to any and every move that the United Kingdom makes. How far we've fallen. Both nations, the United States and Britain. And so much of it is, as I said on the program Friday, I mean, so much of it's self-inflicted. We're drugging ourselves to death. We're drinking ourselves to death. We're fighting each other on the streets. And meanwhile, all of these other nations are lining up to take a swing at the United States, the mighty United States. Well, this Free Beacon piece has a fair bit more to say, but I won't get into it. I mean, it says at the end of it, when they pass these measures in the Iranian parliament, that lawmakers there were heard shouting "Death to America." Death to America as they pass the measure. Okay, you say this? You say this about us? We're going to start firing more missiles. We're going to start expanding our military. We're going to boost war spending. There's another article as well from the Time Magazine. Iran just threatened to restart its nuclear program if the U.S. continues with sanctions. So, hey, we'll start it right back up. That according to Hassan Rouhani, we could do it in an hour, he said. We can get it back up and running in an hour. And he says that once we restart it, the program could quickly be brought to a much more advanced level than it was back in 2015. I mean, a more advanced, is that just an empty, idle threat? I mean, you have the number two man from North Korea. North Korea has nuclear bombs. North Korea has a miniature nuclear bomb. And the number two man has been in Iran for 10 days. I guess he's left by now. But nearly a two-week trip to strengthen ties between nuclear-armed North Korea and the Islamic Republic of Iran, which desperately wants a nuclear bomb, which desperately wants into the nuclear club. Well, they're about to get there. They're nearly there. Another piece here from Al Monitor. Iran-Hamas relations back on track. Says Ali Hashem reports on the visit of a senior Hamas delegation to Tehran, including their participation in Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's inauguration ceremony for his second term. He had all of his friends brought in, the number two man from North Korea, this Hamas delegation. They were all there. Well, one last item here from National Interest. The title says it all, Germany First. It's about the remilitarization of Germany and Europe. The National Interest says for countries like Germany, whose safety has long depended on America's military might and strategic reliability, this is a glaring wake-up call. They need to rethink their foreign policy from the ground up. I mean, they've typically relied upon the United States' military might since the end of World War II. It says, for decades, Germany has, for all intents and purposes, outsourced its own security to the U.S. And it goes on and talks about how the Bundeswehr would undoubtedly participate in any kind of conflict. But now, with President Trump casting doubt on this kind of protective umbrella or the NATO alliance, the article is saying, as so many others have said over the past 6-8 months, Germany needs to act. It says actually in this article that right now it seems to be choosing a course of maximal inaction. Germany's not acting yet. And here you have all these statements coming from the White House, coming from President Trump. They're not acting yet because they don't yet have the strong man. They don't yet have the Daniel 8 man. But when he comes to power, he's going to come in by flatteries. He's going to be a charismatic fellow. And when he comes in, there's going to be some dramatic changes that take place in a hurry. It says, finally, given radical uncertainty about America's future course, making a plan for a future in which the alliance with the U.S. can no longer be taken for granted should be at the top agenda of every European leader. It says, and though it largely goes unspoken, the ultimate upshot of losing America's shield would be obvious. Europe would then need enough military strength to provide for basic forms of self-defense on its own. Europe, you see, would need to be prepared to go it alone. All of this fits right in with multiple Bible prophecies. Well, that's all that we have time to cover today as we work following our youth camp from last week, as we work to get caught up on so many of these dramatic, prophetic events. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Email the program, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.